On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyatt.
And I'm Michael Tomalaris. Coming up tonight, the clean energy target ditched in favour of a new plan Malcolm Turnbull says will cut power bills and carbon emissions.
It provides investor certainty, which the market has been crying out for a long time.
Also tonight, mixed reactions to Australia's appointment to the United Nations Human Rights Council.
The problem for Australia when it comes to our human rights record is that it is badly tarnished by our refugee policy, our treatment of Indigenous people.
And a call for harmony from the son of a man murdered outside a Sydney police station.
All those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock with the news. I'm Michael Tomalaris. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has formally announced a new national energy guarantee that he says will deliver affordable and reliable electricity. It's made up of two parts, including a reliability guarantee to ensure energy is always available and an emissions guarantee to contribute to Australia's international commitments. Mr. Turnbull says it's more affordable than other models, such as Clean Energy Target.
It provides investor certainty, which the market has been crying out for a long time. It reduces volatility, which of course has been driving up prices. It builds on so many other measures we have undertaken, making sure there is sufficient gas on the East Coast market. We've already seen the wholesale price of gas coming down, very significant move, removing the ability, as Josh has recently done, for network owners to appeal against the decisions of the energy regulator.
The federal government has decided not to adopt a recommendation by the chief scientist, Dr. Alan Finkel, to adopt a clean energy target. The opposition's energy spokesman, Mark Butler, says he wouldn't be surprised if the government's new energy plan destroys investment in renewable energy and ends thousands of jobs.
Australia should have at least 50% of its electricity delivered by renewable energy by 2030. We've said that there are a range of mechanisms that can deliver that outcome. Initially, we were in support of an emissions intensity scheme, as was the government until December last year, a position supported by business groups, by the energy industry, by all of the electricity agencies, but vetoed again by Tony Abbott in December last year.
Meantime, Australia's chief scientist, Dr. Alan Finkel, has welcomed the federal government's new national energy guarantee. Dr. Finkel says the plan has all bases covered, including low emissions and an obligation on the system to deliver electricity when needed.
They've got a different credible mechanism, which is based on a retailer obligation, and they've got a different credible mechanism for the generation obligation, for the requirement that the system can deliver electricity when needed. And I think that's fine. The important thing is that they're effectively adopting an orderly transition.
Australia is among 15 countries to have been elected to the United Nations Human Rights Council for a three-year term. Foreign Minister Julie Bishop says Australia will be an important addition to the panel.
It's important for a country like Australia, an open liberal democracy committed to freedoms, the rule of law, democratic institutions and the international rules-based order, to play our part in promoting human rights around the world. There are a number of significant human rights crises at present in North Korea, in Syria and elsewhere, and Australia will bring a very principled and pragmatic voice to the discussions and the actions taken by the UN and member countries.
Iraqi government forces have captured the major Kurdish-held oil city of Kirkuk, responding to a Kurdish referendum on independence with a bold strike that transforms the balance of power in the country. A convoy of armoured vehicles from Iraq's elite United States-trained counter-terrorism force seized Kirkuk's provincial government headquarters less than a day after the operation began. The Iraqi government considers the September 25 Kurdish independence referendum illegal, and its advance was the most decisive step Baghdad has taken to block the independence bid. Stefan Dujarric, representing the United Nations General Secretary Antonio Guterres, has urged all sides to resolve any tensions through dialogue.
He appeals to the federal government and the Kurdistan regional government to take coordinated steps to prevent and avoid further clashes, escalation or breakdown of law and order. The Secretary General calls on the parties to jointly manage the situation and resolve all outstanding issues through dialogue in a manner that is consistent with the Constitution of Iraq.
Some sport news now, and the coach of Honduras' football team, the national team, has reportedly said that FIFA's decision to schedule just 5 days between the Central Americans' two World Cup qualifiers against Australia is inhumane. The first match in the intercontinental playoff for a spot at the finals in Russia next year is scheduled to take place in Honduras on the 10th of November, with the second leg in Sydney 5 days later. Honduran media have reported that national coach Jorge Luis Pinto described it as inhumane to schedule the game so closely to each other when the teams have such a long flight in between them. And finally, a look at tomorrow's weather. Wednesday in Perth, a possible early shower, a top of just 19 degrees. Adelaide warm, becoming cloudy, 33. Melbourne sunny and a top of 30 degrees. In Hobart, mostly sunny, 29. Canberra, fog, then sunny, 27. In Wollongong, Sydney and Newcastle, partly cloudy, a top of 24 degrees. In Brisbane, showers, 24. Cairns, 30 and showers. And Darwin, a possible shower and storm, a top of 34 degrees. Greg, that's it from me. More on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30 with Janice Peterson.
OK, thanks, Michael. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio, 7 past 6. Well, the federal government has released its final piece of the energy policy puzzle, touting its new plan as a chance for Australia to break free from the climate wars of the past. Coalition MPs were briefed on the scheme in Canberra today, following Cabinet's decision to reject a clean energy target as recommended by the chief scientist, Dr. Alan Finkel. Instead, the Coalition Party Room backed an idea from the new Independent Energy Security Board. Aileen Phillips has the details.
Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull and Energy Minister Josh Frydenberg have secured the backing of the joint party room for their new energy policy, the National Energy Guarantee. Mr Turnbull sold it to Australia Today, calling it a game changer.
This is a national energy guarantee that will ensure that we have affordable power, that it is reliable, we keep the lights on and we can afford to keep them on, and that we meet our international commitments under the Paris Agreement to cut our emissions. In other words, it delivers affordability, reliability and responsibility.
And by affordability, it's estimated up to $115 in savings will be made to household bills each year from 2020 for 10 years. The guarantee builds on the government's existing energy policy, which includes ensuring energy retailers offer consumers a better deal, delivering more gas for Australians before it's shipped offshore, and building Snowy 2.0. Energy Minister Josh Frydenberg says it's a pro-market policy which will deliver low electricity prices.
It means no subsidies, no taxes, no trading systems. And what it does do is it creates a more reliable, affordable energy system which helps us meet our international commitments.
The guarantee is made up of two parts, a reliability guarantee to ensure that energy is always available and an emissions guarantee to contribute to Australia's international commitments. The reliability guarantee will see power companies required to use a certain amount of electricity from what's called dispatchable sources, like coal, gas or hydro, to theoretically prevent blackouts. It means there'll be room in the plan for a mix of energy sources, including solar and wind. Under the government's National Energy Guarantee, coal and gas will contribute between 64 to 72% of energy generation by 2030. It's also expected to deliver 28 to 36% of renewables by 2030, much to the dismay of Labor's energy spokesman, Mark Butler.
Australia should have at least 50% of its electricity delivered by renewable energy by 2030. We've said that there are a range of mechanisms that can deliver that outcome.
He also argues the new plan would destroy the renewables sector.
It would restrict growth in renewables over the course of the decade in the 2020s to less than half a percent per year, which would cost thousands and thousands of jobs in this burgeoning industry, an industry that is growing exponentially all around the world.
Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull took a moment in question time to urge support from the opposition.
Get on board and adopt this expert recommendation that has come, that for the first time will level the playing field, end the subsidies, end the taxes, ensure that we have a genuinely technology agnostic energy market.
The government now needs the backing of states and territories.
Aileen Phillips. Ten past six, the son of Curtis Cheng, the accountant who was killed outside Sydney's Parramatta police station back in 2015, is calling for community harmony. On Friday, Alpha Cheng will address Victoria's Parliament about the importance of inclusiveness and speaking up against bigotry. Amanda Kopp reports.
2 years ago, Curtis Cheng was shot dead by a radicalised teenager as he was leaving work at Parramatta Police Station. Now, his son Alpha Cheng is speaking about his family's tragedy and advocating for social cohesion and harmony.
It's definitely was a huge shock to the system, and especially since the assailant that shot my father was someone who's 15. Someone that is the same age as kids that I work with on a daily basis.
Despite his heartache, the Canberra teacher is determined to improve community harmony among his students and beyond. Today, he spoke at a new exhibition in Victoria's Parliament House called Courage to Care, which presents stories of Holocaust survivors and those who helped them. Alpha hopes the past can help society to learn and expel hate.
I've experienced the worst when young people feel like that they don't have control, or they feel like that they are so disenfranchised that hate and violence is the only solution. And if I can lend a voice to prevent that happening in the future, or to make some people's lives just that little bit better, or to think a bit differently, that's what I want to do.
As a history and geography teacher, he became interested in the Holocaust and was accepted into the Gandel Holocaust Scholarship Program for Australian educators just months before his father's death. As part of the program, he travelled to Israel and met several Holocaust survivors. The experience inspired him to advocate for social harmony and to encourage people to stand up against racism and bigotry. The chair of Courage to Care, Tony Weldon, said Alpha is someone who has turned tragedy into something positive.
He obviously had that personal tragedy within his family, and yet has emerged from that horrendous event, not wanting to be vindictive, not seeking revenge.
Among the stories of Holocaust survival in the exhibition is that of Martha Vanderhoek's family. She says her family's story highlights that even in humanity's darkest chapters, kindness can still exist.
My husband's family were saved by very kind, very courageous people in Holland during the Second World War. Now, this family, who were called the Zvanikens, had seven children of their own, but to take an extra child, a Jewish child, would have endangered their lives.
The stories of courage from the Holocaust are sentiments that Alpha wants to spread.
By creating better communities, that's when we can live in a stronger, more harmonious society where everyone is celebrated, and that's the meaning of humanity.
Alpha Cheng ending that report by Amanda Kopp and Sarah Arbo. Still to come tonight, predictions that China's president will remain well beyond what would be his second and final presidential term.
He expects to be around, to be the emperor, the new emperor of China, beyond the 5 years from now.
You're listening to SBS World News Radio with Greg Diet. 16 past six. Australia's appointment to the United Nations Human Rights Council for a three-year term is drawing some mixed reactions tonight. 15 countries have been elected to the 47-member Geneva-based council, including the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Murray Silby reports.
It was Bolivia's UN ambassador, Sasha Sergio Laurenti Saliz, who announced the latest appointments.
The following 15 states having thus been elected members of the Human Rights Council for 3 years, term of office beginning on 1st January 2018. Afghanistan, Angola, Australia, Chile, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Mexico, Nepal, Nigeria, Pakistan, Peru, Qatar, Senegal, Slovakia, Spain, and Ukraine.
Several nations, including the UK and the United States, criticised the decision to include the Democratic Republic of Congo, that's been beset by renewed political and militia violence since President Joseph Kabila refused to step down in December. The African nation won 151 of 193 votes. Foreign Minister Julie Bishop welcomed Australia's success, saying it will be an important addition to the Human Rights Council.
It's important for a country like Australia, an open liberal democracy committed to freedoms, the rule of law, democratic institutions and the international rules-based order, to play our part in promoting human rights around the world. There are a number of significant human rights crises at present in North Korea, in Syria and elsewhere, and Australia will bring a very principled and pragmatic voice to the discussions and the actions taken by the UN and member countries.
Lawyer Hugh De Kretser from the Human Rights Law Centre says Australia has a long track record of being a positive influence at the United Nations, but not so much in recent years.
That track record has been tarnished, particularly in the last decade or so, around our treatment of refugees in particular. So for Australia to be a good, credible voice on the UN Human Rights Council, we need to fix our human rights violations at home, particularly around our indefinite detention treatment of people who've come to Australia seeking asylum, issues like the crisis of Indigenous over-imprisonment. And also at the international level, we need to be far more consistent and principled in the way we speak out on human rights issues.
Australia is the first Pacific nation to become a member of the UNHRC, and Phil Robertson from Human Rights Watch says that presents a major opportunity.
Well, Australia has a huge role to play here, not only issues related to, for instance, West Papua, but also, you know, the ongoing monitoring of what's been going on in Fiji and other issues that will come up in the Pacific region are going to be important for Australia to stay abreast of and to continue to raise at the council. I mean, often these smaller nation states get lost in the business of the council, and I think that it's important for there to be more attention paid to them. West Papua is a major concern because, you know, Indonesia, despite various promises that they are going to allow for greater access to that province, have not done so.
Mr. Robertson says the plight of the Rohingyas fleeing Rakhine State in Myanmar should be another focus for Australia in its new role at the United Nations.
We're dealing with a situation in Rakhine State in Burma with over half a million Rohingya have been forced to flee ethnic cleansing crimes against humanity. It's very possible that some of those Rohingya may be getting on boats as soon as the monsoon season dies down in Southeast Asia, and we might have a major boat people crisis. And at that time, there has to be leadership in a positive way at the council, and not the way we've seen in the past when Australia has dealt with people on boats in a very negative way.
Phil Robertson from Human Rights Watch, ending that story by Murray Silby. Coming up later in the show, how a church-based group of South Sudanese women is helping the young and vulnerable.
First thing, we need to respect the law. Number two, we don't want to be bad people in this country. Yeah, because this country now is a second home for us.
To China now, where the Communist Party has agreed to amend its constitution and is expected to embed President Xi Jinping's political thought at its key party congress this week. China's propaganda machine has gone into action to celebrate the achievements of President Xi's first term in office. Analysts say the moves could elevate him to the same level of power as the country's late leaders Mao Zedong and Deng Xiaoping. Katrina Yu reports.
In Beijing, crowds have been lining up for an exhibition celebrating Chinese power and progress. Entitled 5 Years of Diligent Efforts, it showcases how China has leapt forward in everything from technology to trade. And the exhibition proclaims it's all thanks to President Xi Jinping, known affectionately to some attending as Papa Xi.
Papa Xi is great. Under his leadership, we are getting closer to a well of society than ever before.
I think President Xi can bring us hope and is very capable to lead us to the rejuvenation of our people.
That is a message the Communist Party wants to emphasize as it holds its 5-yearly party congress in the nation's capital, Beijing. The week-long gathering will eventually unveil who will lead the 1.3 billion strong population until 2022, including the elite-level Politburo and Standing Committee. While up to 70% of the party spots are to be decided this year, President Xi's position has grown ever stronger. A former journalist and political analyst based in Beijing, Jaime Flor Cruz, says the Congress will strengthen the president even more.
He's expected to consolidate his power even further, almost complete. And I expect at the end of this Congress, he would have put all his protégés, his allies, into the most important positions in the government, the party, and the army.
On the streets and online and social media, President Xi is being promoted as a strongman and statesman. It's a propaganda push not seen since the days of the founding father of the Chinese communist state, Mao Zedong. That has led many, including Mr. Flor Cruz, to suggest Xi Jinping will remain president well beyond what would be his second and final presidential term.
He expects to be around, to be the emperor, the new emperor of China, beyond the 5 years from now.
Since coming to power in 2012, President Xi has tightened his grip on the media, the military, and the party itself. He has purged previously untouchable political princelings in a ruthless anti-corruption crackdown. An academic with Beijing's Renmin University, Liu Jichin, says he feels total loyalty has been necessary to let President Xi push forward with much-needed reforms.
We need a steady central governance also, that is not interrupted by different ideas or different opinions.
Xi Jinping's key policy is the popular China Dream, a goal to eliminate extreme poverty by 2020. Liu Jichin says Mr. Xi's bold steps to improve living conditions, as well as the experiences of his youth during the Cultural Revolution, make him likable and relatable.
He is a person grew up from the Cultural Revolution, from this disputed time in the past 40 years. He knows a lot of what the people really thinking, what the people really want to have.
As China waits to find out who will fill the president's new inner circle, those outside are watching to see what it will mean for the international community. Under Xi Jinping, China has aggressively pursued its claims of sovereignty in the South China Sea. And as he takes center stage at this week's Congress, it is widely expected a more assertive China on the world stage will follow.
Katrina Yu ending that report from Beijing. A lack of culturally aware welfare workers has been identified as a significant issue confronting Victoria's African communities. The South Sudanese have taken the matter into their own hands with a church-based group known as the Daughters of Jerusalem undertaking voluntary weekend patrols. Here's Luke Waters.
Most weekends, the Daughters of Jerusalem walk the streets of Dandenong in Melbourne's southeast, providing support for young members of the South Sudanese community. The group evolved from predominantly South Sudanese congregations of church groups in the area. Unemployment, substance abuse and crime are issues community leaders are determined to overcome. Volunteer Nawaraga Sham says the group decided to take their message to the street.
First thing, we need to respect the law. Number two, we don't want to be bad people in this country. Yeah, because this country now is the second home for us. We are citizens here. We need to do the good thing. It's not a bad thing.
Fellow volunteer Rita Modi also walks the streets of Dandenong and shares Ms. Sharm's enthusiasm and sentiment.
It's really sad because coming to this country, our first aim was seeking for a better life and better opportunities for our children. So seeing them in this situation like tonight, it does make me sad.
It's often simple solutions the Daughters of Jerusalem provide, such as a lift home, a train ticket, or just the right advice. Apprentice builder Guy Chol says there were times when his life strayed off track, but he says advice and time spent with Nawaraga Sharm and the daughters was invaluable.
They observed the role of, say, a mother figure. So someone that's loving, understanding, that's going to trust you in no matter what you do. So they've personally helped me and helped us just to understand the meaning of life. So by helping, just as a normal mother would do, help you, love you, understand you, care for you and look after you.
But the dedicated daughters can only do so much. South Sudanese community leader Kenyatta Wall is pushing for more African welfare workers to provide culturally specific programs.
We have so many young people who are graduates now who are just looking for work and could not even get an opportunity to start with. So these are the target group we are thinking. If the various organizations here in Dandenong can be able to employ these young people, African or South Sudanese, I think that will make a very big difference.
And the Victorian government's Minister for Multicultural Affairs, Robin Scott, says he sees merit in the concept.
It's important that the services that assist a community should reflect the diversity of our society, and that's something we're looking at in government. The diversity of the workforce has been raised a number of occasions, and we're looking at further measures and what we can do in that space.
But for the time being, the volunteers of the Daughters of Jerusalem will continue their weekly street patrols.
Luke Waters with that story. Time now to check the news headlines. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says his long-awaited national energy plan is a game changer that will see household power bills cut by an average of $115 a year. The US State Department says it's concerned by reports of violence around Kirkuk after Iraqi forces pushed their Kurdish allies out of the disputed city amid soaring tensions over last month's vote for independence by the Kurds. Australia's Foreign Minister Julie Bishop says Australia will use its newly gained seat on the United Nations Human Rights Council to pursue the empowerment of women, Indigenous rights, the abolition of the death penalty, and the crises in North Korea and Syria. Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte has declared Mawari City liberated from pro-Islamic State militants who have held the heart of the city for 148 days. Human remains have been found inside a large crocodile, which police believed killed 79-year-old Anne Cameron in Queensland's far north last week. And the Socceroos have jumped, 7 places in FIFA's world rankings to 43rd after their World Cup qualification victory over Syria. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see Janice Peterson bringing you SBS World News across Australia. You can also live stream the bulletin by going to our website, sbs.com.au/news. I'm Greg Dyett. Thanks for listening.